It was late afternoon on a cold, clear day when we took our young families to the Denver Zoo. Our children had run ahead with their fathers while my sister and I lingered in the building with the large cats. We paused before a full-grown lion, pacing with heavy paws back and forth in his small quarters. A mural of the African plain was painted on the back wall behind him, but he did not look at it. He watched the ground as he paced, and then he suddenly paused, pivoted with purpose. Striking a still and reverent pose, he looked right toward us, not at us, but through us, behind us, beyond us. His face shone in a silent salute, a gaze of awe and longing both. There was regal beauty there, but there was sorrow too. It was a quiet, holy gaze that he cast over our shoulders. We turned to see what had captured his eye, and through the open doors behind us, the orange orb of the setting sun was blazing just above the western horizon. Turning back again toward the lion, we watched, transfixed by the stillness of his watching. Mournful but dignified, a reverent reaching out to the daily light that blessed him then and there and always. A golden light momentarily rested on his face and like a mantle on his shoulders before slipping away as the sun finally set. Then the lion turned and walked slowly through the door into another chamber, out of sight, where we imagined he would wait for the dawn's new light. Here in the northern hemisphere, where the winter nights are long and cold, we know what it is to wait for dawn. Though we may not mark each sunset with the kind of salute made by the captive lion, many of us might identify with his tribute. Both its longing and its way of marking the long wait for the sun's return, whether it is daily or a seasonal return. This time of year is a season of much waiting in nature as well as in many religious stories. We wait for warmer days, for thawed ground in the garden, for buds opening on the branches, and on this weekend, Christians around the world retell the story of the early followers of Jesus, grieving his death and waiting to discover what meaning and hope could possibly come from such disaster. And when Passover is celebrated in a few weeks, Jews around the world will retell the story of the Israelites waiting for liberation from their slavery in Egypt and then waiting in the wilderness. In our personal lives and for many in religious life, we make our way through winter and spring by waiting. Of course, it might be hard to call this true waiting when we know so well how each of these stories will turn out. Those who sat in Christian sanctuaries darkened on Good Friday knew that the trumpets would sound in the same sacred spaces today on Easter morning. And in every Seder celebrated, the taste of the bitter herbs reminiscent of slavery's sharp reality will soon be followed by wine as the taste of joy and liberation. And in nature, despite the unpredictability of weather and even the threats of climate change, we do know that the seasons will turn in time, that daylight will grow longer, bringing spring's thaw and the abundance and bounty of summer. Today, in the 21st century, there is so much that we know. It can sometimes be hard to remember that our greatest promise and possibilities lie in what we do not know and in learning how to wait in ways that prepare us for new knowing. We are encouraged to enter a deeper kind of anticipation, to wait without knowing exactly what it is we're waiting for, or what it will look like when it comes, or how long it might take for it to happen or arrive. It is this kind of waiting that is most useful in our work for justice, for peace, and social change, when we don't really know if or when change will come. How will we put an end to the terrorism that struck again this past week, this time in Belgium, tragically and ironically in the waiting lines in the airport as people waited to go through security? In situations like these, where we are waiting and waiting through the mounting losses and grief, we must practice a kind of waiting that is not passive, but is attentive. Not complicit or complacent, but creative. Not idle, but marked by preparation for possibilities as yet unknown. "It is so unimaginative not to do something better," said the poet Naomi Shihab Nye, visiting the Twin Cities last weekend. She was referring to the violence in the Middle East, but it might have been any other violence in any other place, or it might have been the devastation we can experience in our own personal lives. "It is so unimaginative not to do something better." The thing is, imagination takes time. It often requires a lot of waiting. In Szymborska's beautiful poem that we heard earlier, recovering from war or any disaster requires not only a lot of hard work and cleanup, but also time and healing that eventually will allow a dreamer to set aside old grudges, to lie down in the tall grass, to look up at the clouds, imagining another new and wholly unknown peaceful way. This is as much about personal disasters as it is about the collective ones Szymborska describes. For who among us has not known the effort it takes to clean up and begin again after the loss of a loved one? Or after illness, or accident, or job loss, or depression, any of these and so many more can leave our lives in the kind of ruins the poet describes. And yet, beneath the rubble of our losses lie in waiting the beginnings of something new. As my oncologist likes to promise, you will never again be the same, but you will come to a new normal. You will find beginnings in all of this. The healing and the opening of ourselves to new ways of being will come, but it does require time and waiting. Unfortunately, we live in a time that does not always value waiting. We believe, don't we, that we deserve better. We deserve faster. We deserve answers now. Years ago, a toddler visiting our house came into the kitchen asking me for a drink of water, and I said automatically, "What's the magic word?" He didn't pause a second before answering loudly and insistently with a word that was not the one I was looking for. "Now," he said. We laugh at this, of course, but how often as adults do we have the same response inwardly, even if it goes unspoken? I know when I'm in traffic crawling along in rush hour, or when I'm waiting on the phone for a real human voice to finally speak to me, or standing in a long checkout line, I'm not exactly proud to admit the number of times I have felt my inner child stamping her foot and shouting the word now, at least inside. How do I overcome my habits of impatience? How do any of us learn the habits of waiting that are neither impatient nor complacent, but instead are creative, cultivating new possibilities in our heart and in the world? We might begin by taking a page from the book of customer satisfaction and several recent studies about the nature of waiting and what makes it tolerable. It turns out that the worst kind of waiting is not necessarily the longest, but the most idle. So if we find ourselves waiting for an interminably long time, whether it is for spring flowers to open, or for the results of a biopsy to come back, or for justice to roll down like water, we might employ a useful discovery made by the interior designers of high-rise buildings. They have found that we bide our time more patiently when waiting for elevators if we wait in front of a mirror. This way, we pass the time more happily by fixing our hair or adjusting our clothes and making sure of our appearance. So, in our waiting for peace and justice, or even waiting for a new chapter in our own personal lives to begin, how would it be if we held up a different kind of a mirror? What if we use our waiting to regard the inner condition of our hearts and to make adjustments there that could prepare us for something entirely new? This is what Thoreau was writing about in Walden when he charged us to reawaken and to keep ourselves awake with an infinite expectation of the dawn. He was inviting us to cultivate a morning mindset that could carry us through the long night and through the challenges of many a long day as well. Perhaps we can also learn from the example of South African leader Nelson Mandela, whose extensive legacy, celebrated after his death a few years ago, included not only his work as a justice seeker and a peacemaker, but also his remarkable capacity to forgive, and the way that he cultivated this in his long years of waiting while imprisoned. Of course, he knew there should be no waiting for the equal rights and the freedom that South African blacks deserved but were denied under apartheid. He staked his whole life on it. But when he was convicted in 1963 of political offenses and sentenced to life imprisonment, he did not let the next 27 years in prison give rise to either impatience or resentment. Rather, he made use of those years to prepare his heart for a different possibility. He learned the language of his oppressors. He developed relationships with his guards. He cultivated his own understanding of those who imprisoned him and denied him and other black South Africans their basic human rights. And he grew things, not only keeping a garden on Robben Island where there was land to do so, but later, when he was transferred to the mainland facility that was entirely cemented over, he requested barrels of soil and seeds. And with them, he grew produce, providing food for his fellow prisoners, but also sharing it with his white guards. Through these and other efforts, he kept his heart awake and open. When his freedom was finally granted, he was prepared not only to be freed from prison, but also to be freed from the hatred that he later said he wanted to avoid because it, quote, clouds the mind. He had used his waiting time to cultivate the inner seeds of forgiveness that would later, during his presidency, grow into a national and worldwide legacy of reconciliation. What might we learn from Mandela's example in our own seasons of waiting? How might we use our times of waiting to cultivate in ourselves a heart open to forgiveness, an infinite expectation of the dawn, and a hope for peace even against all odds? Engaging a spiritual practice is one good way to do this. Whether it's meditation or prayer, yoga or writing, whatever your practice is, it can help you make use of your right waiting. Spiritual practices turn our attention toward the inner transformation that will support the change we seek in our personal lives and in the world. What spiritual practice supports your heart in times of loss and long waiting? The book I've written, Writing to Wake the Soul, describes one practice, the spiritual practice of writing, that is not just for writers, but for any of us, reaching for words to describe and explore our lives, our hopes, our fears, our faith, and our wonderments. But there are many other practices that can grow your soul while waiting. One of my own favorites, in addition to writing, is Tai Chi, including a simple warm-up exercise that I learned from Chongliang Alwang, a Tai Chi teacher from China who lives in the States now. And in describing this, he says, first, you find and face your personal south. By this, he means that direction that gives you light and energy in any given moment. It might be true south, where the sun lingers in the day, or it could be any other direction in which we find a source of light and energy. So when I'm in my backyard in the morning, I face east toward the dawn. And when I'm at the riverbanks in Hudson, where I live, I face west toward the water. In any other day or place, it might be south or north. Here in this sanctuary, we might face the chalice or the stained glass window, or as I am facing you and finding in your faces so much light and energy. We turn towards whatever brings us life. The practice begins then with a simple step with one foot and a gesture with the opposite hand, saluting that direction of our personal south, our source of energy. And then it's followed by a series of 90-degree turns, doing the same thing in each of the other directions as we go to the side and behind and come back around and return to our personal south for one final salute before settling down in our feet and honoring the energy that comes from beneath our feet and above our heads. It sounds simple enough, and it is, but it also can be a profound reminder to orient ourselves in the direction that gives us light, warmth, energy, and inspiration. Just as a plant does automatically, but we humans often get distracted and forget to face the very places and sources that feed us. And so when I do this and I pivot in a full circle, I also remember that the world is a multidimensional place and that I will be most grounded if I awaken my awareness not only to the south, but to the wider context in which I live and the way it radiates out in all directions, not only 360 degrees around me, but also above and below and even profoundly within. I sometimes call this full circle living, an awareness of our need not only for daylight, but also for shadows and for night, not only for wakefulness, but also for the dream consciousness that comes to us in our sleep, not only for action and transformation of the world, but also for waiting and the transformation of our own hearts made possible only by standing still. These are the rhythms and the directions our world and our lives are made of, and this is what it means to be awakened in a way that does not forsake us even in our sleep. As we close today, I invite you to consider, in the silence that follows my words, what might you name as your personal south on this day? What source of light, of warmth, of energy might you turn toward as you move through the losses and the grief, the unknowns and the endless challenges and disasters that life is made of? What practices will orient you toward that light so that you might carry dawn within? As the poet May Sarton reminds us, it is the patient, silent waiting of a bird warming her eggs that invites new life to come. She writes, "The Phoebe sits on her nest, hour after hour, day after day, waiting for life to burst out from under her warmth. Nothing but a presence, proffering no slightest wish toward anything that might happen or be given, only the warm, faithful waiting contained in our smallness. Beyond the question, the silence. Before the answer, the silence." So may our waiting be patient and faithful and unknowing. So may our hearts be prepared for something new. So may we carry the new day within.